This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July 18th, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Are the contract ties in? And what now? We'll ask those questions and many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Aaron Curtis at Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today are Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question, Brian Stark. When will you be willing to say the December corn and November bean life of contract highs are in place?
Well, I think it's probably a little easier on the corn right now based on what we've seen improvement across the Corn Belt to say that, at least for the summer month, I will say that the DEIS corn contract has probably reached its high for now, barring any major dry weather in late July, August. Beans are a little tough. I don't think the contract high is in. I think by the time November goes off the board, we'll see a new high. The bean crop is not as impressive as the corn, and I think there's a lot of holes that got drowned back out at the beginning of July rains.
Bill Mayer, life of contract highs?
Well, I'm not ready to say yet that they are. I like to put some odds on things. I'd say at this juncture, I'd put a 30% chance on the corn that we could see new highs yet before the corn goes off. I think we've got a lot of things yet to go here, a long ways before we know where we really are on this crop. On the soybean side, I guess I tend to agree with Brian. I think that there's a tighter supply nearby in the 07 crop, and we've got more things that can still happen to the soybeans because we're just now starting to get into the critical growing period in about 2 weeks, and then we've got frost. So I think there's a better chance, 40 to 50%, that we could still see new highs in the beans.
Well, let's stay with the soybeans for just a bit. The August contract this week had a high of $15.89, a low at $14.70. It is the new lead option, so we go from July to August on our weekly trade, which means there's a drop of $1.60.5. A settlement price for the August soybeans at $14.70. Last week, that settlement would have been in July. November contract, a $14.48 settlement price at $1.38, probably one of the most important pieces of information that came out this week. Happened late in the week, and the Argentine government finally said, well, we're not going to worry about that export tax, although it's a hefty export tax. It's just not as hefty as it was in the last month. I think it's, 35% is now their export tax. It's the same as it was in November. Is that going to make much difference in the marketplace?
Oh, I think it will eventually, Todd. I think the last 3 or 4 months as the farmers protested down there, U.S. saw an increase in the demand. So we're dealing with a tighter supply. I don't think it affects the old crop stocks that we're carrying in now. We're already tight, but down the road it will. The funny note about all this is that the vice president had to cast the deciding vote, and he went in favor with the farmers because he's from a rival party. It'd be kind of like a Republican and Democrat in the White House for us.
All right. So let's talk about soybeans just a bit. Last week on this program, we had a couple of folks talking about some pretty high levels. $18 soybeans were counted in as, I think, a pretty good possibility in their minds. Has that estimation changed very much this week?
Well, I think that we have to get soybeans to the level where we can get expansion in South America, and that's going to include the dollar weakness and strength as well as the soybean price. At current dollar index levels, I think that we probably could see soybeans move up to those kind of levels if to be able to get that expansion that we need. I don't think we're going to solve the problem, the tightness of soybean supplies in the United States this year, just because of what we had talked about with the crop and that. And I think the real key to the soybeans is going to be getting more acres down there. And I don't think we're doing it at current levels, that's for sure.
Well, you know, I have some questions on that. So do we have to have $18 soybeans, or do we have to have what looks like an $18 soybean in South America? And at what level is that? Do we know once you make the change into their currency? What level? I don't know whether we want to call it $18, but what buys acres in South America at this point?
Well, I guess as I was looking at it, I think that you get up into that level, that $18 level at current index numbers, and I'm not sure what that actually relates to. I think in the $12 to $13 level to a Brazilian farmer, I think that's going to probably get us more acres down there.
The only thing I'll add is the real in Brazil right now is around 2-1 to the dollar. So if you figure that, that would probably put beans closer to 20. But I think obviously higher levels and now probably 18 is a good number to encourage. A Brazilian co-op this week indicated that right now at these prices that they see down there at $8 equivalent, probably would only expand acres 2.3%, and we're probably looking at needing at least an 8% expansion down there.
But let's not, as we're talking about $18, I think a $2 to $3 move in soybeans are going to be pretty common here as we move through this growing, the rest of the growing season. So I don't want people to focus necessarily on 18. It may move away from that and move back to it pretty quick.
You mean $2 to $3 as the whole range or as half of the range?
Half the range. $2 up, $2 down, I think is going to be
so $4 to $6 on a range with a midpoint where?
I don't know that I can get that specific, Todd.
You want to try, Brian?
Well, a midpoint, I would say, probably would be in the $15.50. Let's just throw that number out. I think somewhere between $15 and $16 would be a midpoint.
Okay, so $15.50, a $3 range, pushing it up to $18.50 on the top and down. Okay, $12.50 on the bottom side of the range. You want to try a corn number on a range?
Sure, why not? Well, we're throwing numbers out. Why not? I would say probably $5.50 on the low end and maybe $8.50 on the high end if things really get distressed over the course of the next 4 to 6 months.
Dave Dickey and I were looking back at just the charts and could throw out a $6.40 and a $5.40. So I suppose that range. The problem is you have to keep going far enough back to find that extra 50 cents in there on the bottom. It's pretty easy to get, I think, 590 to 640 when you look back at its consolidation range. But that was, what, April?
Mm-hmm. April, right.
We did April. But if you go before that, you can get back lower than that. So the question is, when we get to the top end of that range, is that where producers should market corn? Or do you have other spots that you're thinking about for producers to market? And I guess I'm thinking cash corn as much as anything at this time.
'07 crop corn, you're saying?
'07 crop corn.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from an '07 standpoint, I'd probably say if you still have that left, I would look for the top end of that range that you're talking about as being a place to let go of it. But I guess I don't think this market is going to be is going to calm down here a lot. I think that it's going to get to where it needs to get to on the bottom side, and then we're going to see it go back the other way. We may see some consolidation for a week or two, but I could sure see the way it's setting up as looking at an August-type rally.
Yeah, every time you think that the corn market should go down for any reason, it just continues to rally on back. Certainly it did that last fall. Most people didn't think that it would rally with such a large crop in the ground and coming into the bin at that point, and it went ahead and rallied way into new contract highs, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, and I think that's why we call it futures, because a lot of times we're looking down the road to the next year's crop, and with this year's potential bean outcome not relieving some of the tightness we've seen, that's potential, we could be in the same boat again. The one thing I will add on the corn side of things is that this big break in the board, while I may be hit up a little bit for saying this, is good for the overall demand structure of the market. It's allowed livestock guys to get a little more comfortable. They're not hurt as bad. We clearly have rationed demand by the 250 million bushel cut here a week ago in the S&D report. So I think grand scheme of things down the road, as you alleviate that price pressure, there's less likely that the government is going to intervene and do something and allow the market to dictate where it needs to be.
So just because I pulled these numbers up, I want to talk about some of them and maybe nothing more than to mention them. Most people think about the $25 Minneapolis Grain Exchange number, but we ran out of spring wheat. And if we want to put some numbers on that, a bottom end of that range was $3, top end was $25. These are on the monthly charts going quite some distance back to $89 for the soybeans. You can run down to $4 for beans and up to $16 for soybeans. On wheat in Chicago, and I won't go all the way back, but let's say $3 to $13. So that $25 mark in Minneapolis was a whole lot different than what happened in Chicago and Kansas City. And then on the corn, we'll make it easy and we'll jump it up just a bit and say it was $2 to $8 on those long ranges. So that those are the kinds of things we're talking about. But it's real money. I think there was a week this week or last week when we had nearby soybeans drop 70 cents when they were headed off the board. That's a lot of money. And, you know, these are things where you can see $14,000 or $750 or $750 or something, or $7,500 in either your corn or soybean crop disappear in a day fairly quickly. And farmers are needing to protect that kind of loss while it's on paper. Are they still needing to protect that kind of loss is the question. Is the volatility still in this marketplace? And if it is, what do they do?
Yes, I think to answer your first question, yes, I think the volatility is still in the market. What do they do? I guess I'm not real excited about making sales here, but if there's a, you know, if you're in a situation where you haven't done any marketing at this point, coming in here and making some sales at these levels, you're probably still starting out at a higher average, and a lot of scale-up type selling is going on out here. I think there's some other things that you can do on the corn side of it. You can look at some short-term put options, like some Septembers, get some protection on that way. You can look at doing some bear call or bear put spreads, where you buy a put, sell one below it, try to pick up the range in between there. Still, in both those cases, you're leaving yourself open to the upside in case the prices go higher. But, you know, depending on the situation you're in, I mean, our strategy basically is that we should have the 08 crop pretty much covered one way or the other.
Corn futures this week at a high of $6.78 and a quarter, a low at $6.08 and a quarter. Their settlement price, and this is the new lead, so it's a difference from July to September, $6.09 and a half on the SEP, down 70.5 cents from last week. December corn at $6.28 and a half. This week was 80 and three quarter cents lower from the week before. Wheat futures September contract $8.42 for the high in Chicago, the low at $7.96 and a half, a settlement price down 15 cents at $8.04 for the nearby September. July contract $8.79 and three quarters, down 21 cents this week. And the September oat futures are the new lead from the July. $4.25 was the settlement price there, down 36 and a half. Let's talk a little bit about carryout. University of Illinois developed some numbers this week out of a weather model that they adopted from Iowa State. It can show a 12 billion bushel corn crop. If that's the case, and you say that's just 300 million better than what USDA was saying, roughly speaking, we still end up with just a 1.1 billion bushel carryout next year. How small is that in the grand scheme of things now?
Well, I think that that doesn't take the volatility out of the market either. I think to really throw a surprise into this thing, I think that you really have to come up with some kind of number, you know, trend or better yield that we're looking at. And the other side of it is it's a dynamic process. I mean, this week's market allowed ethanol producers out there probably to come in, lock in some additional crush out further. And so maybe, you know, that's kept our demand steady there. So two things that we didn't really mention there, that weather is improving, the crop's improving, and the crude oil took a pretty good hit this week, and I think that had an influence too. But I don't think a 12 billion bushel crop necessarily takes us down a lot further than some of the numbers we've been talking, but it probably does put that top in there.
The only thing I'd add to Bill's comments, same thing for now, maybe a temporary top, but down the road, I think things will be interesting as far as if the government opens CRP and what they look at the ethanol mandate here for Texas.
I would agree with that.
Here's what the numbers look like from the CME group this week. The August live cattle, $100.60 the high, the low at 97.30. Settlement up, or rather down 370 at 97.50. Hog feeder cattle at 113.87.5 were up 215. And the lean hog futures settled the August contract at $76.90, $1.92.5 higher from last week. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Aaron Curtis from Midco.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois residents enjoyed fairly typical July weather this week as high pressure established itself across the central United States. Temperatures were 2 to 4 degrees below normal, believe it or not, the first half of the week. Warmer and more humid air settled in for the last half of the week, but temperatures for the period still ended up below normal. That is also the case for the first half of July. It was also a dry week for most of the state. The exception was in southeastern Illinois, where rainfall for the week was about 1.5 to twice normal. Thunderstorms ahead of the cold front pushing through Illinois on July 12th and early on July 13th dumped 2 to 3 inches of rain on the area. The rest of the week was dry. At mid-July, most areas in Illinois have already received their normal monthly rainfall. A weak cold front will try to push south through the state beginning this weekend, and that should increase the chances for scattered showers and thunderstorms. It appears that the front will have a hard time moving south and may hang up from eastern Missouri along the Mississippi River through southern Illinois. The boundary will be a focal point for shower and thunderstorm development no matter where it ends up, so another totally dry week is unlikely. Temperatures will be above normal this weekend, but should drop back to near normal levels by early in the week. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July the 18th. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Brian Stark of the Andersons, right here in Champaign County, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Our guest is Aaron Curtis of Midco. He's located in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Aaron.
Good afternoon, Todd. Good to be here.
Now, what did you make of the week's trade in the lower marketplace?
Well, I think we continue to see the fund markets continue to move out of corn and soybeans. You know, whether it be improving crop conditions, which your panelists talked about a little bit, which is part of it, but also some fear from the government that some kind of interactions are going to take place here as we move forward. We saw crude oil, you know, drop about $15 here in 3 days. So I think that's also part of that, too, that some kind of government interaction is going to come in here and limit some of the fund activity or at least make some of these funds play by the rules that the rest of us are having to play by. So I continue to think that you know, the funds continue to move out of the market, whether it be to raise capital to help fund some other things that they're maybe losing some money in. You know, we've heard a lot about different banks may be in trouble and those kind of things. So all those things continuing to see some liquidation on the from the funds, and that's been mostly the driver here this week in corn and bean market.
Are there rumors that CFTC is going to limit the action of those funds?
No, I think we continue to have some ongoing discussion about that. I mean, you know, we've had these panels in the past. You know, back in June, that we saw one of these panels continuing to create some conversation about their involvement. And you know, Lieberman continues to press forward on his legislation that would limit some of that speculation in the crude oil market. So, you know, I think that's created some kind of nervousness here with the funds, and that'll continue to be monitored here as we move forward.
I have one more question on the crude oil, and then we'll get back to the grains and the oil seeds. What's the possibility that what's really happening in the crude oil market is that because China is limiting their transportation ahead of and after the Beijing Olympics, that really it's just the futures market speculating on how much less usage there will be out of China while they try to clear up their air?
Well, I like to believe that that's what the reason is, you know, back to a traditional supply-demand type factor, and that could be some underlying reason for some of the reason we saw some liquidation in that market. But the big elephant in the room, I think, has to do with some of this impending legislation regarding the funds, I think.
Aaron, Brian here. Do you see any type of support? I mean, in corn, when does the bleeding stop? We have some sort of level where we'd find people wanting to come in and buy this here after this huge break?
Well, I think psychologically we got to look at this $6 level. That's kind of where we started here back at the beginning of June when the flood damage started to creep into the marketplace and some of the weather premium got put back in that market. We pretty much take that out here once we get back to about $6 and hopefully we'll start to see some more demand, both export side and domestically, start to perk up at that point. And, you know, that basically takes out the June rally back to $6, and then maybe we start to level out a little bit there, Brian.
Aaron, I'd like your outlook. You deal with a lot of elevators. Your basis outlook as you look into harvest here in corn and beans.
Well, I guess we'd look for not a lot of improvement. I'd say maybe some modest improvement here as we move forward. Obviously, for our customers, this break in the board the last 2 weeks has been a welcome sign. So it's been kind of enjoyable from that standpoint for our customers, freeing up some of the margin crunch that they've seen for most of this 2008. But maybe a little bit of a modest improvement here. We've seen some improvement, especially areas like the Upper Illinois River. But when you still look at historical averages, they're still below those levels, so even though they've had some improvement here in the last couple weeks, it's been kind of bittersweet when you look over the overall picture. But I guess I'd look for a little bit of some modest improvement, but nothing anything dramatic here as we move forward, Bill.
How can you see the marketplace moving into the fall season? Generally, we have in the last several years gotten an early season or a pre-harvest low and then moved higher through harvest. Do you think that's a possibility again this year? If so, why or why not?
Well, I think we can. I think we still, you know, might see a little more downside depending on how conditions go. You know, I kind of like to get through that August 12th report. Both seeing a couple more weeks here of weather here as we move through pollination and also kind of see what the USDA comes up when they're in their survey for the acres on August 12th before you're ready to sit here and say that maybe a high's in on corn. But I think, you know, once we get this crop put away, then we go back to 2009. In the last couple years, we've continued to have to bid up for acres, and I see that continuing. And at this point, you know, just hearing some rumblings from some elevator managers expecting some more beans to be planted, especially in northern Illinois where corn is king up there. There's already some talk that, you know, at $14 beans for November 09 futures, I can forget the headache of what these input costs are going to cost me and plant some beans. So I think we'll continue to see that acreage battle here as we move through next year and then watch the USDA and see what they want to do here with the CRP acres moving forward.
Ag economist Darrell Good tells me there's still convergence problems with corn, soybeans, and wheat. How much of a problem will that be for producers, do you think, as we hit the harvest season?
Well, I think it's going to continue to be an issue. The CFTC is opening talks again. Sounds like July 29th they're going to have another meeting concerning Chicago wheat futures. Obviously, that's been the main leader here for lack of convergence, obviously, here the last couple years. So I think that's going to continue to be an issue. And I guess looking forward right now, you don't see a lot of that those issues with convergence changing anytime soon.
Brian, again, Aaron, not to put you on the spot, but what have you been hearing from your customer areas as far as crop conditions? Is the corn crop really getting better, as the USDA says it has been the last couple of weeks? Is the bean crop as poor as some people say? What, in your opinion, what have you been hearing?
Well, I think it's all over the board, but I would agree that the corn conditions are you know, our customers in Illinois, the corn conditions are getting better. You know, part of that might be the fact that some of these holes we can't see from the road anymore. I don't know if that's the factor or not, but I think overall corn conditions are going to get better and have gotten better. And I think from here, from Bloomington north, we're going to have some pretty good corn, and in some areas are going to be close to what they were last year, which was a record in some spots. You know, southern Illinois is the big question mark at this point. A lot of that corn obviously went in late. I know I went down to St. Louis and back this last weekend, and I thought, you know, south of Springfield, the beans didn't look very good for what I was seeing anyway, and I think there's still a big question mark out as far as beans are concerned, and I think that's going to be an issue here as we move forward into harvest. A lot of this we're not really going to know until we get into it.
Switching to the demand side, do you see the demand continuing to drop as we move into the next couple of reports?
Yeah, I think... I think level out more than anything, probably, Bill, as we move forward. I think we've seen some reduction, obviously, in the supply-demand reports, but it's going to be interesting to see what this $1.50 break in corn that we've seen in the last 2 weeks, if that starts to show up in the demand side here as we move forward. I guess for old crop demand, I guess I wouldn't see a lot more reduction moving forward, and then we'll kind of see crop conditions that might determine a little bit about what demand is going into next year.
Do you think that livestock producers should lock in anything at this point?
Well, I have to be honest with you, Todd, we don't deal much on the livestock side, so I'm going to have to defer that one to your panelists.
Anybody want to take a stab at that one, Brian?
I'd say yes, because the lower the prices go, in my own opinion, I think the less likely the government's going to intervene. I think they want the market to control supply-demand without having to make a huge decision. Now, that doesn't mean they won't look at open CRP, but their ethanol mandate, that's their policy. And the EPA, I think they want to push forward going greener. So if we can reduce and relax some of the concerns in the livestock industry, which I think this has to help this $1.50 break in corn, I would be looking at locking some in, because there's no guarantee that they'll do something, and if they don't, we're going to be dealing with the same acreage issue next year.
And I have one final question to poll everybody on, and it's twofold. One, should CFTC intervene and lock down the index funds? And maybe we'll start with you, Aaron, yes or no?
Yeah, I believe so. I would just like to see the index funds more playing by the rules. You know, they're officially listed as hedgers right now, and you know, changing that classification to a speculator would be a start.
I would just soon see the government stay out of it at this point.
I'd agree with Bill. I think they provide extra liquidity and counterparty risk management, so I think you have to be very careful in limiting speculation.
And I think this is an easy yes or no question, but should U.S. EPA roll back the RFS waiver?
No.
No.
Brian? And Aaron?
No, I agree.
All right, thanks much, everybody. We appreciate you being with us, Aaron.
Thank you.
Aaron Curtis is with Midco. A quick final word from our analyst in studio.
Average crop revenue enlistment acre. It's a part of the new farm bill. You need to get yourself familiar with it. You're going to have some decisions to make in September, I believe.
Last word from myself. I would just encourage producers not to panic sell. Volatility in the market has shown us this week that the market can go down 70 and back up 70 the next day. So we'll have opportunities to make sales.
Our thanks to go to Brian Stark of the Andersons, who you just heard, and to our other panelists in the studio with us, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week for the 18th day of July. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to this program and other ag programming on demand anytime you'd like. Right there on our computer is an MP3 file. Or sign up to have it delivered to your computer as a podcast. Don't forget, while you're at willag.org, to also sign up for our absolutely free weekend newsletter. I'm Todd Gleason.